Good morning, everyone. Today's Daf in Yuma is Daf Yud Beis. We're on the bottom of Yud Alef Amud Beis, and we are continuing our discussion of mezuzah. Why did mezuzah come up in the Masechta? We're learning Yuma, we're not learning Menachos, where the most of the halachas of mezuzah can be found. So the answer to that is because of the Parhedrin. Regarding the Parhedrin, the Gemara says that the Kohen Gadol would be living there for 7 days, so it became his home. So as a result of it becoming his home, so therefore it requires a mezuzah. Is that Minatora Midaraisa? So as we go back all the way to Yud Amud Beis, that was a machlokes between the Tanaim. Tanaim argue whether or not the requirement of mezuzah is a din d'oraisa or just simply a din d'rabbanan. Rav Yehuda and the Tanakama disagree. Tanakama says it's a din d'oraisa, and Rav Yehuda says it's a din d'rabbanan. Tanakama says it's a din d'oraisa because he lives here. He lives here for 7 days. And Rav Yehuda says, no, it's just merely a din d'rabbanan. Why? Because he's not. He doesn't have a choice. He doesn't get to choose where he lives. He's told where to go. It's like a prison. It's like a jail, and doesn't require mezuzah. It's a dira ba karcha. It's a forced dira, and the Gemara says a dira ba karcha lo shmei dira. That's not considered a residence. That's the opinion of Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda will acknowledge, however, that a mezuzah does go up, so that people kadesh lo yomer, so that people don't say, "Hey, look, the Kohen Gadol is in a jail." So therefore, put a mezuzah there. Okay, but that's the machlokes between Rav Yehuda and the Chacham. As long as we just mentioned the word mezuzah, so the Gemara thought a great opportunity to discuss mezuzah, and that was yesterday's daf. Yesterday, the Gemara went through a lot of discussion, basic discussion, general discussion regarding the halachas of mezuzah. What houses require mezuzah? What houses do not require mezuzah? Residential houses require mezuzah. What about non-residential houses that have some usage? So that was most of yesterday's daf, and most of the discussion yesterday's daf, machlokes between Amoraim, whether or not a house which is not a residential home but has some usage, whether that's going to require mezuzah or not going to require mezuzah. Another discussion the Gemara had yesterday was the kippah, was the archways. Do the archways require mezuzah when they don't have the minimum length and height requirement of a doorway? Minimum height and length requirement is 10 by 4 tefachim, 10 tefachim high, 4 tefachim wide. What if the archway narrows as it gets to the top? Is it going to require a mezuzah? That's another machlokas. Tanayim, between Rav Meir and the Chachamim. The machlokas over there is based on, it's platformed on the principle of Chokakin Lahashlim, whether or not we look at the arch and we carve it into the arch as if to say that that area is actually cut out. That's another machlokas. And then we went on in the Gemara yesterday, Tana Rabbanan. So we're going to start again, Tana Rabbanan. We did some of this yesterday, but I'd like to start because it's just really the beginning of a new section. On Yud Alef Amud Beis, we are more than halfway down on the Amud. Tana Rabbanan, Beis HaKnesses. Ubeis HaIsha, Beis HaShutfim, Chayav Mezuzah. So a shul, which we'll talk more about today, and a Beis HaIsha, and a house that is owned by a woman, and Beis HaShutfim, or a house that's partnered, in other words, there's more than one owner, so all of them are going to be chayav mezuzah pshita. The Gemara says, okay, all this seems to be obvious. No, ma'od detema, Beis Chava lo Beisa. Beis Chava lo, I'm sorry, Beis Chava lo Batehem. Kamash Malan. So the Gemara says, well, here's what I would have thought. The Havamina would have gone like this. The Torah says, Uchsavtem al mezuzos Beisecha. What does the word Beisecha translate as? Your house. So in other words, it has to be an owner, there has to be a possessor, and on top of that, it also has to be an individual. Beisecha is in the Lashon Yachid. It's an individual. So I might have thought that the requirement of mezuzah is only when one person owns the house. And on top of that, it's male. The construct of the word is male. So I might have thought that is only going to be the chiyuv mezuzah is only when a single male owns a home. So that's the chiddush of the Gemara. That no, even if it's a woman, even if it's a shutfus, even if it's a shul, which we'll get to in just a moment, in all those scenarios, you're going to be chayv in mezuzah. Ve'emach, and the Gemara says, wait a second, Hamma, I mean, it was fantastic. Meaning, yeah, you're right, the Torah does say the word beisacha. So the Gemara says, Amakar, laman yibu yimechem yimei b'nechem, hani b'ayachay v'hani lo b'ayachay. So the Gemara says, mitzvara, it's almost like absurd to suggest that women who own a house are not chayv mezuzah. That partnership group who owns a house doesn't own mezuzah. It's an absurdity. Why is it an absurdity? Because the Gemara notes, immediately after the mitzvah of mezuzah, the Torah says, laman yibu yimechem yimei b'nechem, so that you're going to have a long life. Doesn't everyone want a long life? So in other words, the benefit, the fringe benefits of having a mezuzah is levan yibu yimechem, and presumably, who wouldn't want that? It's a svar. The Gemara offers a svar in terms of why it is that Anyone who owns a home, even if it's a woman, even if it's a partnership group, is going to be chayav mezuzah.
Why don't we apply the concept of the money redeemed to all the other mitzvot besides mezuzah, like tefillah for women?
Right. So the simple answer to your question, it's a good question. Simple answer to your question is just simply because of the juxtaposition. Meaning, if you look at the
right after mezuzah.
Yeah, I mean that.
The thing is that there's a whole list of mitzvot, and
I hear you. The point is very well taken. So ella beis chal amali. So then, why does the Torah say the word beis secha? So kederava damarava derech biascha v'chiyakar inish karei diyamina akar bereishay. So the Gemara says because you've always put your right foot forward. In other words, so you're standing at the entrance of a house and you're walking into the house. Your right foot's going in first. So therefore, where does the mezuzah belong? On the right side as you enter. Okay. That's what we learned from the word beis secha. By the way, what's interesting to note, the Gemara over here doesn't make this point. The Gemara Menachos makes this point. We could have another simple drusha from the word beis secha, and that is, it has to be your home, meaning the home has to be owned. Meaning, what if I rent the home? Is a rented home going to be chayav in mezuzah? So, presumably, the answer should be no. A rented home is not going to be chayav in mezuzah. In fact, the Gemara Menachos says that min haTorah, you're renting a home, it's not chayav in mezuzah. Now, midrabanan, you need to put up a mezuzah. But midaraisa, it's not chayav in mezuzah. Well, how do I know that? Because the Torah says, "Uchsaf to mamzos beis secha uvisharach." It says your home; it has to be ownership. So why doesn't our Gemara mention that? So that's a question that already bothers the Rishonim. Tosfos and Menachos on Daf Mem Dalet. If you take a look, he says that the two Gemaras disagree with one another. Meaning, our Gemara is of the opinion that a rented home is chayev in mezuzah min haTorah, and we know that because of the omission. Because our Gemara just simply doesn't mention anything about a rented home. And so therefore, Tosfos is of the opinion that the two Gemaras argue with one another whether or not a rented home is going to be Chayav Mezuzah or not. So it's just an interesting aside. Tanya Idach, we're in the Gemara. Right.
It has nothing to do with your house. That's the way you...
That's Tosfos' point.
It could have been before.
Correct. Tanya Idach, we are on the wide line on Yud Aleph Amid Beis. We learned in another Brisa. Beis HaKnesses, or Beis HaShufim, or Beis HaIsha Metamim B'Negaim. A house that's owned by a partnership group, a house owned by a woman, are all subject to Tumas Negaim. We know, when you go through the Parshas of Tazria Mitzara, so three things are subject to Tzaras. Number one, the human body. Number two, your clothing. And number three, your house. Your house is subject to Tumas Negaim. If you find a nega in your house, you call over the Kohen. He'll make a house call. Maybe he'll come over. He'll take a look. Yes, tzaras. No tzaras. Okay, he'll make a decision. But in other words, houses are subject to tzaras. Now, not only is the house which is owned by a single male, but even if it's owned by a female, and even if it's owned by a group. So the Gemara says, Pshita. Now, why is this coming up? So you'll see. In other words, because the argument over here is going to be a very similar argument to the one we just had previously. Pshita, the Gemara says, isn't that obvious? Ma'u detema? No. The Gemara says, it's not obvious. Uva asher lo habayis. And he goes to him, meaning he, the Kohen. This is when the Kohen is paying a house call. So he goes over asher lo, to him. So how does the Torah describe the house? Owned by a single male. So lo v'lo Lov lo lahen, kamash malan. So the Gemara says that's the havamina, that the word lo means specifically, exclusively him, not her, him, not them. So that's the chiddush. And again, the Gemara says ve'ma achinami. It's a good havamina. So amakra beveis eretz achuzas chem. The Gemara says no, because any house which is owned in the land. So in other words, when the Torah ends off with the words beveis eretz achuzas chem, it means any owned home. So it could be owned by a partnership group, can be owned by a woman, still going to be subject to the Tumas Nega. So Ella Lo Lamali. So the Gemara says, so what do we learn from the word lo? Mi Shemuchad Beso Lo. She'ena rotsa lahashal keilav va'omer she'en lo kash baruchu mefarsamo. So the Gemara says, you know who's going to get tzaras on their house? The person who borrows, and when asked, please return the item that you borrowed. So he says, what item? And he hoards. And la'ashul kelav v'amr she'en lo. HaKadosh Baruch Hu mefar samo. So what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to do is HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to now basically call him out. Because we know what the halach is that when the Kohen pays a visit, ufinu es habayis. The Kohen says, okay, first things first, let's take everything out of the house. Now the reason why, you take everything out of the house, is because before the Kohen is going to render a decision as to the whether the house is tummy or not, you take everything out of the house, so it saves all those items from becoming tummy. The Gemara over here says there's another benefit, or not benefit, but there's another purpose in bringing everything out of the house, and that is, you show the world what you had in your house. And all those items that you've been hoarding, and all those items that belong to other people that you've been denying. Oh, no, that I don't have it. I don't know what you're talking about. It will be revealed that you have it. Kishimafanas beso, pralamashal kivla acherim. So the Gemara says, so when you clear your house, so you are going to have be forced into a position where you're going to show everyone, no, I do have those items. And then the Gemara notes, then if you lend items, then you're not going to have to worry so much, because then you won't be, you'll be on the other end of the borrowing. You'll be the lender. Okay. Adkan, that takes us now through, so basically we're having two discussions simultaneously. We're talking about whether a partnered house, a home owned by a group, is subject to the halachas of mezuzah, and side by side, we're having a parallel discussion of whether it's subject to the laws of tumas saras. And in the answer of both occasions is yes and yes. It's chayv and mezuzah, and yes, it's subject to the laws of saras. We're going to discuss a shul. Now, we just saw the brisa. The brisa says the shul is subject to the laws of saras. And if you go back up one more brisa, the brisa previously said a shul is subject to the chayv ha-mezuzah. The Gemara says the basic kinesis me matam and negaim shul subject to tumas negaim. That time we learned in the brisa, yachol you about the kinesis about the midrashos matam and negaim. I might thought that the shul and the base medrash is subject to nega tamalam or avasha lo abayis mishim yuchad lo yatzuel shem yuchadim lo. So we have a second brisa, and the brisa says that a shul is not subject to tumas saras. Now, by the way, that doesn't necessarily mean that your shuls won't get saras. Maybe your shul will. There's no declaration. Meaning, even if your shul does get saras, there's no declaration, there's no kohen paying his visit. In other words, it's just simply not declared as saras. Meaning, a shul is simply, it may or may not be impervious to saras, but the halachas of saras just simply don't apply to a shul. Okay, so obviously now we're at somewhat of an impasse. One brisa ago, we said that a shul is subject to the laws of saras, and this brisa that we just quoted says that a shul is not subject to the laws of saras. That's called a stira. So lo kasha, the Gemara says here, let's try to resolve it. And the Gemara is going to try to resolve this in one of three ways. Number one, HaRabbi Meir, HaRabbanan. So one way to resolve the stira is just simply say, look, it's a machlokas, machlokas tanaim. The tanaim will enter a brisa, beis hakneses, sheish ba beis dira, lechazan, hakneses, chayev b'mezuzah. V'she'ein ba beis dira. Now, if a shul has a beis dira, meaning if there is shamash lives in the shul, so then good. There's nothing to talk about. It's going to be chayev b'mezuzah. Now again, remember, the concurrent discussions of the Gemara over here mean that if it's chayv and mezuzah, it's subject to tumas nega. If it's not chayv and mezuzah, it's not subject to tumas nega. It's two concurrent discussions happening in the Gemara. So if a shul has a house connected to it, attached to it, and the shamash is living in it, so it's a shul and it's a home. So therefore, it's subject to saras and it's going to be chayv and mezuzah. V'she'ein ba beis dira. But if there is no beis dira, so in other words, it's just a shul. Rabbi Meir Mechayev and Chachamim Potrim. Rabbi Meir says it's Chayev and Mezuzah, and the Chachamim say it's Potrim Mezuzah. Okay, so what do we see clearly? That a shul, whether or not it's Chayev or not Chayev and a Mezuzah, is subject to a machlokas amongst the Tanaim. And now we're just going to simply apply the same machlokas to Tzaras. According to Rav Meir, it says that a shul is chayv and mezuzah. A shul is also subject to Tzaras. According to the Chachamim, say that a shul is not chayv and mezuzah. It's not subject to the laws of Tzaras. That is explanation number one. Ibai thema havaha rabbanim v'lo kashe disbei beis dira ha'leis ba beis dira. Suggestion number two of the Gemara is that both brises reflect the position of the Chachamim, and the difference between the two brises is whether or not there's a beis dira. Meaning, the first brisa that says that a shul is chayv and mezuzah, that's because someone's living in the shul. The second brisa that says that a shul is not obligated to mezuzah because no one's living in the shul. Ibai thema, third approach of the Gemara, havaha d'leis ba beis dira. In both cases, there is no beis dira. No one's living in the shul. Hadekrachim v'hadekfarim. And the distinction we're going to draw is the distinction between shul of a big city versus shul of a small village. What's the difference? So for this, we need Rashi. Take a look at Rashi on the top of Yud Beis Amud Aleph. We are on the top of the Yud Beis Amud Aleph. And Rashi writes, Dikrachim shehu makam shvakim umiskabtim sham mimakamos harbei. So in the big city, it's a metropolis. People are coming from everywhere. Vihi asuya lakol, The shul, therefore, is made for everybody. In other words, it's not a private entity. It's not a private shul. I am not speaking now in legal terms and financial terms. I'm just now speaking in terms of who is it made for. The shul of the big city, says Rashi, is made for everybody. So, there's no specific owner. It's really a public shul. It's a shul made for the public. Come in, leave, whoever's here. That's the shul of a krach. Shul of a krach is what now is arguing the Gemara. It's not chayv a mezuzah, because it's not really a private entity. They can't look at it as a group of people have this shul. It's not so, because everyone's coming in. However, let's take a look at the next Rashi. But the shul of a kfar, the small town shul, kol ba'alav nikarim. Rashi writes, all the owners of such a shul are recognizable. It really becomes no different than a house owned by a partnership group. It's a shul owned by a partnership group. It's not a public entity. It's more of like a private entity. Okay. And so what the Gemara now is trying to draw the distinction that in a public shul, in a shul of krachim, not obligated mezuzah, a shul of kfarim is obligated mezuzah. Gemara is now going to see if this distinction really holds true. Now, in terms of a shul of a large city, it's not subject to Tumas Negaim. Now, again, remember, it's a concurrent discussion of the Gemara. We just keep going back and forth between Mezuzah and Saras. But it's really the same point. If it's not subject to Saras, it's not going to be obligated to Mezuzah.
Because the word Beitecha is...
Yeah, because, right, because Beitecha means it's a home. So the Gemara says, the Gemara says, but consider the following, the Torah regarding Tumas Sarah says that if it's achuz aschem, if it's an inheritance, so then it's subject to Tumas Saras. But if it's not, then it won't be subject to Tumas Saras. And according to this Braisa, Yerushalayim, the city, is not subject to Tumas Saras. I'm Rav Yehuda. Ani lo shamati al makom mikdash bavad. And Rav Yehuda says, "Yeah, I've heard of such a ruling, but only regarding the Beis Hamikdash, meaning not the entire city of Yerushalayim, but just the Beis Hamikdash area." Period. Ad kan divrei habraisa. Now, what does it sound like from this braisa? That Rav Yehuda, meaning according to the Tanakhama, the entire city of Yerushalayim is exempt from tzaras, and presumably also exempt from mezuzah as well. Fine. And for a reason which we'll explain in just a moment. But really, right now, let's focus on Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda says, in the city of Yerushalayim, do you know what's going to be exempt from a mezuzah? The Beis HaMikdash. Period. Nothing else. So the Gemara just makes a simple inference. Ha bate kinesio, so bate midrashos metame benagayim. Va'afagav dekrachim ninu. That means, then, that everything else in Yerushalayim is going to be obligated in a mezuzah. So all your shuls in Yerushalayim and all your base medrashes in Yerushalayim are going to be obligated to mezuzah. And Yerushalayim is certainly a krach. It's certainly a big city. So you try to make this distinction that a shul of a big city is not chayv a mezuzah, and a shul of a big city is not subject to Tumas Saras. Sounds like, from Rabbi Yehuda, it is. So, Imam Rabbi Yehuda, ani lo shamati la makam mikudash bilvad. So the Gemara says, okay, what we'll do is we'll revisit the statement to Rabbi Yehuda, and we'll modify the statement just a little bit. Not mikdash, but mikudash. And what's the difference? Mikdash is referring to the actual area of the base of mikdash. Mikudash means any sanctified area. Any shul, right? Like
that was done by David.
Similar to what we said yesterday, in that we made a distinction between kodesh versus chol. If it's a base chol, it's gonna require mezuzah. If it's a base kodesh, it's not going to require mezuzah. So basically the same idea being expressed on the top of Yud Beis Amud Aleph, according to Rav Yehuda. Not mikdash, but mikudash. If it's a holier, it's a holy place, i.e. the base of mikdash, i.e. a shul, i.e. a base medrash, so then it's not going to be chayv a mezuzah. Masha enke, when it comes to a base chol, so it would be required a mezuzah. And if all this is true, if our modification is right, so then we're good. And then it comes out that according to Rav Yehuda, a shul in Yerushalayim is exempt from mezuzah. Why? Because of the distinction between kfarim versus karachim. This is a big city shul, not obligated to mezuzah. Okay. B'maikim miflagi. Look, we just quoted the Braisa that according to the Tanakhama, the entire city of Yerushalayim is not subject to tzaras, ostensibly not obligated to mezuzah. Why not? Gemara is going to quote, we've seen this now already a number of times throughout Shas, and we get to see it again on Yuma Daf Yud Beis. Mamai Kamiflagi, Tanakamas of Yishlam Lon Nizchakal Ishvatim, Rav Yehuda Sav Yishlam Nizchakal Ishvatim. And the machlokus over here is between the Tanakama and Rav Yehuda in terms of whether or not Yerushalayim is divvied up amongst the Shvatim. We know that when we went into Eretz Yisrael, 7 years we conquered Eretz Yisrael, and the next 7 years we divided Eretz Yisrael. Each one of the Shvatim got a chelik of Eretz Yisrael, except for the city of Yerushalayim, according to the Tanakama.
There was no Yerushalayim then.
There was Yerushalayim. Correct. In other words, and Shiloh, I mean, your point is well taken. Shiloh, for the four centuries, was like, that was a Makam HaMikdash. Okay. And I guess you have to say that for those four centuries, they knew that that wasn't going to be a permanent structure. Right. But anyway, but Yerushalayim was not divided, according to the Tanakhama. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, Yerushalayim was divided. Now, according to Tanakhama, Yerushalayim was not divided, so therefore, it's not Beis Achuz Aschem. It's not an inherited land. It is ownerless. It is a non-divided land. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, no, it's owned. Who owns it? Which Shevet owns it? Stay tuned, as the Gemara is about to explain. The Gemara points out that the Machlokas Tanayim that we just saw regarding whether Yerushalayim is distributed amongst the Shvatim or not is also expressed in another Braisa. Did Tanya went to the Braisa Mahaya Bechalkosha Yehuda? What was in the Chelik of Yehuda? Meaning, the author of this Braisa clearly is of the opinion that Yerushalayim was divided amongst the Shvatim. Specifically, two Shvatim got Yerushalayim. The Shevet of Yehuda and the Shevet of Binyamin. In fact, you could basically draw a line literally through the Beis HaMikdash, and part of it belongs to Yehuda and part of it belongs to Binyamin. Maya Bechelko Yehuda Harabai Lishkos Vazaros. So in terms of what parts of the Beis HaMikdash belong to Yehuda, so that would be the Harabai Lishka and the Azara. Umaya Bechelko Shel Binyamin. Now, what was the chelik of Binyamin? Now, remember, this is. I'm so confused. Right? This is west and this is east. So, in your mind, just basically flip it around. So, basically, what the Gemara is going to describe is that here's a line drawing down. Anything east of this line, going in this direction, that belongs to Yehuda. Anything west of this line is going to belong to Binyamin. And the Gemara says, what belongs to Binyamin? The Ulam, the Heichal, the Beis Kodesh HaKadoshim. So the Ulam, the antechamber, the Heichal, and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So in other words, anything interior going westbound is going to belong to Binyamin. Uritsua, one second. Uritsua, I say, Yotz Mechalkosh Yehuda, Menechnesa Lechalkosh of Binyamin. Now basically what happened is that if we were drawing the line, it would go here, and there was like a strip. In other words, you see how the ramp is almost like cut off? So there was a little encroachment going right here, running right up against the Mizbeach, so that the actual line of demarcation between Shevet Yehuda and Shevet Binyamin runs right along the Mizbeach. In fact, that is why the Gemara elsewhere says there is no Yesod, there's no foundation over here, because this is Yehuda land, not Binyamin land. Uritsua shel Haisa Yotze Mechalko Shal Yehuda V'nechatz L'Zechal Shal Binyamin Omaya Mizbeach Banui. I'm sorry, Ubaya Mizbeach Banui. And the Mizbeach was built right there, right on that edge. Binyamin Atzadikai Mitzar Allah Lebala. Now Binyamin wanted to swallow it up, meaning Binyamin wanted that portion. So Lebala B'chol Yom Shenemer Chofef Alav Kol Hayom. The Torah says regarding the bracha of Binyamin, chofef alav. Rashi explains over here on our daf that the word chofef means he stressed, he had anxiety. Binyamin wanted that portion of the Beis HaMikdash. L'fichach zacha Binyamin atzak v'naseh u'shpizchan l'gvura. So because Binyamin so desperately wanted it, he had such a desire, so therefore he was given the holy parts of the Beis HaMikdash. He was given the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Heichal, the Ulam, and quite frankly, also got the Mizbeach as well. So all this goes to Shevet Binyamin.
He was the only child that was born in Israel.
Right, correct. He was born in Eretz Yisrael, as opposed to the other Shvatim, or not. So the Shenamer Ubein Ketefav Shachain. It says that Ubein Ketefav. He shouldered, right? He Binyamin, Shevet Binyamin, shouldered the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? So that Braisa clearly is of the opinion that Yerushalayim was divided. And the Braisa speaks with very clear specifics in terms of which Sheva got which part. The high Tana Sava Yerushalayim and Chalkal Shvatim, as opposed to this Braisa. Or this Braisa goes the other direction. Titanya in Maskir and Batim Yerushalayim Lafi Shein HaShalayim. According to this Braisa, the Yerushalayim is ownerless. It's like reservation. It's like there is no ownership of it. In fact, you can't even call yourself the Baal Bais. Meaning, let's say you have a house in Yerushalayim. I don't know how this works, according to this Braisa. I never know how it works. But you can't say it's your house. It's not your house. But let's say you reside in a home in Yerushalayim. However that works. Maybe it's licensing. I literally have no idea. But let's say this is so. So, you can't charge rent. It's not yours. So what do you do? Lefisha and Shlahem. I mean, what do you do? You do nothing. You know, in other words, somebody knocks on the door and says, hey, I'd like to stay here. Okay. Can you charge rent? No, it's not yours. There's no such thing as being a landlord in Yerushalayim, according to this Braisa. Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Tzedek Omer, aflo mitos. You can't even charge for bed. I mean, you just can't charge, period. So, it's a funny scenario that you're in if you have a house in Yerushalayim. People come in, people stay, but you can't charge. Okay. You can't kick them out. Exactly the point. There is none. I don't know how it works. I understand principally, conceptually, what's going on now in the Gemara. Practically, I literally have no idea how it would work. Anyway, lefichach oros kachim balei ush bezichnan no linos abizroa. Now, so what would these quote-unquote homeowners do? So the homeowners would basically say to the people who stayed by them, look, I know I can't charge you rent. I know I don't own this home. But you know what? You were just in Yerushalayim. You were just in the base. I'm sorry, you are in Yerushalayim. You were just in the base of Mikdash. You just offered karbanos. You just have hides. Because remember, anyone who brings a karban gets to keep the hide. The kohen keeps the hides of the ola, but the owners keep the hides of the shlamim. So, and I know you have new hides. So, you know what? Thank you. I'll take those hides. Right? The Gemara, the way the Gemara describes it is bali ushpazchenot lenoso bezroa. Zroa means with arms. They take it with force. They shouldn't. They don't have the right to take it because they have no right to collect rent. But in lieu of rent, they take these hides as basically as some form of payment, compensation for, you know, the imposition of staying in the home. Now, Amar Abaye. So Abaye says, look, what can we draw from all this? Meaning, it's certainly not right what these homeowners in Yerushalayim do because they're not really homeowners and they're really not allowed to take anything. But Abaye says, but can we walk away with a simple lesson, and that is Shmamina Orech Ara LeMishvakinish Gufo Mashcha LeUspize. You know, it's Derech Eretz. Meaning, let's talk from the perspective of not the owner but the renter. A renter should leave some sort of tip, some sort of gift for the owner of the home. Gufo Mashcha, jugs and hides and leather hides, leather pouches. In other words, that's Derech Eretz. In Yerushalayim, the homeowners took it, they grabbed it. They didn't have a right to do so because they didn't own the home. Okay, fine. But in general, it's really appropriate / Derech Eretz that you should, that the renter should leave something for the owner. Okay. So basically what we have accomplished so far is we were trying to draw a distinction between how shuls of the village versus shuls of the big shul. And the reason we wanted to draw such a distinction is because we had two brises earlier. One says that shuls do require mezuzah, one says shuls don't require mezuzah. And so therefore a big distinction came out to be, well, the shuls of Krachim do require mezuzah. Sorry, let me do that again. The shuls of the big shuls of the cities don't require mezuzah, and the shuls of the small village do. And the difference being, as Rashi explained at the top of the Amud, because the small village shuls are like partnership. It's like a home owned by partners, as opposed to the big shul, which is really more of a public facility. Okay, and that just led. It took us off on a tangent, where then the Gemara went on to describe how Yerushalayim may be totally exempt from mezuzah negayim because Yerushalayim is not omed at all. And then the Gemara reflected two brises which argue this point, whether Yerushalayim was or was not divided amongst the Shvatim. The Rambam, by the way, I say this for Hedy, the Rambam is of the opinion that Yerushalayim was not divided amongst the Shvatim.
You say Yerushalayim, every house in
Yerushalayim? Every home. In other words, the city is not part of, it's part of Eretz Yisrael, it's just not owned by a Shevet.
Owned by everybody.
It's public property. Huh? I assume the old city. I assume so. I don't know if there's any type of annexation of this of the area. Udik farmi matame benegayim. So now, good. Now that we're involved in this distinction between shuls of a big city and shuls of a small city, so it comes out now that a shul, a small town shul, could be subject to tzaras. Okay. Gemara says, is that so? Udik farmi matame benegayim. I tell you, we learned in a brisa. Lachuza ad sheyichbashu osa. The Gemara says, when all said and done, this brisa that we just quoted could not be any clearer that in order for a home to be subject to tzaras, it has to be identifiable to an owner. There has to be clear identification that this home is owned by that person. So a shul, even if it's a small town shul, can I point to the owner of the shul? No. Ela machvarta kedushinu meikara. So the Gemara says, you know what? Although we spent nearly an amud trying to defend this approach, this third approach, the difference between a big shul and a small shul, the big city shul versus a small town shul, the Gemara says, when all said and done, we're going to have to abandon ship. Meaning it was a good attempt, it was a good try, but when all said and done, we're going to go back to one of the previous answers. Either it's a machlokes between Rameir and the Chachamim, or a shul that has a residential home attached to it versus a shul that does not have a residential home attached to it. We'll go back to one of those distinctions. But this distinction of big shul versus little shul, the Gemara says, no, it doesn't work. Okay. Adkan. Okay, that takes us. That took us through the section of Lishkas Parhedrin. We discussed why is it called Lishkas Parhedrin. That was Daf Tes and Daf Yud. We discussed whether it requires a mezuzah. That's the end of Daf Yud, Yud Aleph, and now half of Yud Beis. And we move ahead in the Mishnah. Umitakne lo kohen acher, and we have a kohen waiting in the bullpen, and he's on call. So that if in the event something happens to the Kohen Gadol, so a call will go out to the bullpen, and we'll call in the lefty. Actually, you know, I don't know if you like my baseball analogy, maybe you don't, but he can't be a lefty.
He can't be a lefty.
Right, correct. He's a right, any Kohen, right, we know that a Kohen, left-handed Kohen is a mum, is a ba mum. That's a blemished Kohen, he can't do the avodah. So he's not going to be left-handed. So, right, correct. Train him young how to use his other hand. Anyway, umasakne lo kohen acher. So, but what we do is we put up another. We set up another kohen in the event something happens to the kohen gadol. Now pshita. Now the Gemara says, look, here's a. Well, let me first introduce the problem, and then we'll see what the solutions are. The problem is the following: it's chinuch, it's inauguration, meaning a kohen gadol needs to be inaugurated as a kohen gadol. Now, what is the inauguration process? Well, I mean, we spent a lot of time discussing that from the context of the miluim. What happened during the 7 days of Miluim? The Kohen Gadol got dressed every day, got Nimshach every day for the 7 days. So there's dress involved, there's Mashiach involved, and there's Avoda involved, meaning he has to do some sort of actual Beis HaMikdash Avoda. Okay. So the question is as follows. If it's a game day decision, the Kohen Gadol is now out of operation. He can't do the Avoda. And now we're calling up the Kohen Acher. We're calling now the substitute. And now he's going to come in. Okay? No chinuch? Meaning what? Huh?
No orientation,
no warm-up. What meaning? What? Where's... He's just going to do the avoda right there. He needs chinuch. He needs some sort of inauguration. What will be his inauguration? That's the question. The Gemara is going to give a number of answers to this question. So, I'll explain. So, pshita erebo psul kodem tamid shel shachar mechan chinuch sabe tamid shel shachar. So the Gemara says, look, here's where I'm not bothered. Let's say the psul of the Kohen Gadol takes place before the Tam Shel Shachar. Good. The next Kohen Gadol, the substitute now, has a chance of doing the Avodah before doing the Avodah Yom Kippurim. Because we will see over the course of this Masechta. But we know already that the first avodah done in the morning is the Tamashah Shachar. Actually, truth of the matter is it's a Trumas Hadeshen, but stay tuned, we'll come back to that point later on. So the Tamashah Shachar is so perfect. So Kohen, new Kohen Gadol, where you're about to do the avodah of Yom Kippur, what's your chinuch, what's your inauguration? Tamashah Shachar. Good. Done. But let's say the Kohen Gadol, the original, did already the Tamashah Shachar. And after that point in time, he becomes disqualified for whatever reason. And now we have to call it to the bullpen, and now we're asking the new Kohen Gadol to come in. Now what is he going to do? He's just going to run right to do the Avodas Yom Kippurim? Meaning he has not been inaugurated as the Kohen Gadol. What will be his point of inauguration? What is he going to be? What is he going to do to be inaugurated? So Amar Vada Bar Ava Bav Neit. So you know how his inauguration will be. He will wear the belt. Wear the belt, meaning the belt that he's going to wear to do the avodah of Yom Kippurim is different than the belt of a regular kohen. Now we've done this before, but let's do it again because it comes up now in today's daf. Let's talk. Let's have good belt talk. Right here in the daf Hayomi. Okay, the belt worn by a Kohen Gadol, the Torah talks about its composition. The Torah is clear. Kohen Gadol's belt is made out of shatnes. It's made out of a composite of wool and linen. Okay, normally that's aser. Torah says for the Kohen Gadol, it's not aser. It's a mitzvah. Good. What's the composition of the belt of a regular Kohen, a Kohen Hedjot? Torah never says. It's a machlokas. It's a machlokas amongst the Tanayim, what exactly the composition of the belt of a regular Kohen is. So for now, let's assume that the belt of a regular Kohen is made up of linen.
Pure linen.
Pure linen. I take it back. No, I'm going to... No, I'm. Let's assume that the belt of a regular Kohen is shatnes. Let's assume... Again, we don't know. It's a machlokas. But let's assume it's shatnes.
Same as a Kohen.
Perfect. Okay. Perfect. Why perfect? Because now, as he gets a call up to the bullpen... And now he's going to be taking off his regular begadim, and he's going to put on the begadim of the Kohen Gadol. Now, I'm not talking about the Shmona begadim, the eight begadim worn by the Kohen Gadol, but I'm talking now about the begadim the Kohen Gadol is going to be wearing as he goes into Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now, oddly enough, he wears only four begadim, and oddly enough, they're the same begadim as worn by Kohen Hedjot. Meaning, when the Kohen Gadol goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he really looks no different than a regular Kohen. So now, one distinction can be made. And that is that as a Kohen Gadol, the belt that he's going to be wearing is linen. The regular Kohen Gadol, when he's wearing a Shmona Begadim, has a shatnez belt. But that the Torah says. The Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, Michnese Bad. He's wearing only linen as he goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So now the Gemara says, now I get it. Meaning, assuming that the Kohen Hedjot is wearing a shot in his belt, and now he gets called up straight to do the Avodah Yom Kippurim. Not a problem. Takes off his shot in his belt, and puts on the strictly linen belt of the Kohen Gadol.
Also
but he doesn't know, he's not wearing this. It's not, again, we're going straight to the Kodesh HaKadosh. So there's no tzitz.
So
Nope, the machlokas is going to be what the belt of the regular Kohen is wearing. If we assume that the regular Kohen is wearing a shatnez belt, so then we have a clear demarcation what is a Kohen Hedjot versus what's the Kohen Gadol of Yom Kippur. So the Gemara now is going to discuss Amar Avada Ba'ava Ba'avneit Hanich Laman Dar Ma'avneit Shal Kohen Gadol Zehu Avneit Shal Kohen Hedjot. Now, if you hold that the Kohen Hedjot's belt is shatnez, just like the Kohen Gadol's belt is shatnez. Now, don't get confused. We're now discussing the Kohen Gadol's belt year-round. Mm-hmm. So if it's a shatnez belt, so perfect. Meaning then I understand. His inauguration will be, I'm taking off my shatnez belt, and I'm putting on my linen belt. But if the Kohen Gadol, if the Kohen Hedjot is wearing a linen belt, so now if he gets a call up, after the Tamashah Shachar, and now he's going straight into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, is there going to be any real change in his dress? No. And so the question now is, what's his chinuch? What's his inauguration? Michael Amemar. So Amar Abai, so the Gemara suggests, Lo Veshmona Umahapech Bitzinor. So Abai says, well, you know what he could do? Put on the Epigadim of the Kohen Gadol, Now the Tamei Shel Shachar was offered already. So what is he going to do? So work the grill. Mm-hmm. Work the barbecue. In other words, go up to the Mizbeach and turn over, flip the, I don't want to say flip the burger because we're talking about Karbanos over here and I don't want to be Mevazeh B'Kachin, right? The Gemara says a couple of days ago that B'nai Eli were Mevazeh B'Kachin, and so let's not say that. But in other words, they'll flip over the Karbanos then on the top of the Mizbeach. So Mahapech B'Tzinara, and with a fork he'll flip it over. Now, is that Avoda? Ben asks, and well, right now where our answer is going to be yes. In fact, take a look at the last Rashi on the Amud. Rashi over here gives us a principle, and that is, Rashi is ahead of where we are, but I'll still read it because it basically makes the point. Alma kruve avoda havi avoda. If you accelerate the avoda, that's considered avoda. Meaning, right now the meat is on the mizbeach and it's burning. The olas atamid is on the mizbeach and it's burning. Okay. Let's say it takes an hour to burn. If you accelerate the process, if let's say by you flipping it over, it's now going to take a half an hour to burn, you've accomplished an avoda. If all you've done is nothing more than just simply accelerate the process.
That's the melacha on Shabbos.
And, very, excellent. In other words, by Shabbos, we've talked, very, very good. On Shabbos, we've spoken about how that also is chilul Shabbos, by accelerating cooking. That's considered, right? That's memar bishulo. If you accelerate cooking on Shabbos, that's considered cooking. So here too, right? Very good. Here too, same basic principle that if I accelerate the avoda, that's considered avoda.
Is that Doreit or
Darabon? All this seems for Shabbos and for here, it's on a Doreit level. That's a simple pshat. So the Gemara says good. So that's one possibility. So again, suggestion of the Gemara right now. How, he gets called up after the Tamei Shel Shachar. What's his inauguration? Answers the Gemara, according to Abaye, Mahapech B'Tzinara. Right? Flip over the carbon on the Mizbech. Ravuna says that if a non-Kohen were to do it, he'd be Chayv Misa because it's a Zar doing Avoda. That's answer number one. Rav Papa Amar, Avoda So Mechan Chaso. Rav Papa will give a fundamental answer. I mean, the previous answer also was fundamental. That memaher, that acceleration is considered avoda. But he'll give another answer, and that is the avoda. Meaning, in dress, he looks exactly the same. Nothing's changed in terms of dress. But in terms of he's going to do the avoda, the performance of the avoda is the inauguration. Milotanya kolakelim shasa Moshe mishichasan mekal chasan. In other words, the Gemara draws an analogy. When it comes to kelim, so when Moshe made them, so how did I inaugurate the kelim? With mishicha, through the shmearing of the Shemna Mishcha, like we discussed earlier in the Masechta. Mikan ve'elach, we discussed it back in Shkalim. Okay. But we go back. But from that point going forward, any kli that's made after that point in time, the avodah is mechanech, meaning the service of this kelim is going to be the inauguration. Hachanami, avodah so mechan chaso. Here too, same thing. The avodah of the Kohen Gadol is going to be his chinuch. That'll be his inauguration. Now, by the way, if Rav Papa is saying this, it sounds like from the Gemara, Abaye disagrees. It sounds like by Abaye not applying this answer, it sounds like, no, you just can't. In other words, there has to be some prior inaugural point. He just can't simply go in and do the avoda. So it seems to be that we have a machlokes between Abaye and Rav Papa. Okay. The Gemara mentioned earlier this machlokes of what the composition of the belt of a Kohen Hedyot is. The Gemara says, let's go back. Let's discuss it a little bit more. Ki asur of dima amar of netos shel kohen hejot Rebbe Lazar Rebbe Shimon. It's a machlokes between the Tanaim. Echad amar shel kolayim v'chad amar shel butz. One is of the opinion that the composition of the belt of a kohen hejot is kolayim. One is of the opinion that it's linen. Testayim de Rebbe hu damar shel kolayim. So the Gemara says here, I think we can identify that Rebbe's of the one that says it's made out of shatnez. The Tanya, we learned on a bray saying ben kohen gadol kohen hejot ella. Avnate divirebi. The only difference between the dress of a Kohen Gadol and the dress of a Kohen Hedyot is only going to be the belt. That's a hard statement to understand in of itself. What do you mean, the only difference? Kohen Gadol wears 8 begadim. Kohen Hedyot wears 4 begadim. So what does that mean, the only difference? So stay tuned. We'll come back, we'll try to decipher that statement of Rebbe. And Rebbe loves the Rebbe Shimon Omer, af lo avnate. And Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon says, no, not even the belt. I mean, they're identical. Kohen Gadol and Kohen Hedjot. Okay, that's the Braisa. To which the Gemara says, what are we talking about? Amos. When are we putting the Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Hedjot side by side? If we're putting them side by side year round, you can't see the difference? If you can't see the difference, you have issues. Kohen Gadol is dressed in his eight begadim, with the tzitz, with the ephod, with the choshen. Right? And the Kohen Hedjot is wearing just four begadim. So, obviously, we're not putting them side by side year round. When are we putting them side by side? On Yom Kippur. So now, if I put them side by side on Yom Kippur, while the Kohen Gadol is wearing his four begadim, where he's going to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so now, that's the statement of Rebbe versus Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon. Rebbe says, what's the difference? The belt. Why? Kohen Gadol is wearing what kind of belt? Linen. Kohen Hedjot is wearing what kind of belt? Shatnez. Good. And what is and the second opinion of the Braisa, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, saying no, same. Kohen Hedjot's wearing a linen belt. Kohen Gadol's wearing a linen belt. Same. Okay, if we're right in our assumption, so then we've identified. Rebbe's of the opinion that the belt of a Kohen Hedjot is made up of shatnez. So, El Allah, B'yam HaKippurim. Good. That's the Pshat in the Braisa. Amre, so they in the yeshiva said, maybe not. Lo la'olam b'shar yimos ha'shana uvahanach t'shavim. No, we're putting them side by side year round. And so what do you mean the only difference? No. Of course there are basic differences. Tzitz, choshen, ephod. But in other words, on the common clothing that they're wearing, that's what we're comparing. That's what we're putting side by side. Where the Kohen Gadol is wearing a belt made out of shatnez year round, and the Kohen Hedjot, according to Rebbe, is wearing what kind of belt? Linen. Oh, so in other words, that if that's the pshat of the braisa, and then the conclusion would be just the opposite. That according to Rebbe, the belt worn by Kohen Hedjot is linen, not shatnez. So the Gemara says maybe that's the pshat in the braisa, and therefore we cannot conclusively say that Rebbe holds the belt of a Kohen Hedjot is made up of shatnez. An interesting aside, quick and interesting. The Kohen Gadol wears a hat, and a Kohen Hedjot wears a hat. But they're not described the same way in the Torah. Take a look at the top Tosfos. When the Torah describes the hat of the Kohen Gadol, the Torah describes it as a mitznefes. When the Torah describes the hat worn by Kohen Hedjot, it's described as a migbaot. And Tosfos notes that there's a small and subtle difference between them. Kohen Gadol's hat has to leave room for the tzitz. Has to leave room for the tefillin. Kohen Hedjot's hat, there's no tzitz by Kohen Hedjot. So they are slightly different than one another. And Tosfos is just remarking how basically our Gemara, who's putting the Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Hedjot side by side, is making no distinction, no differentiation between the hats that they wear. And Tosfos basically says it's because the difference really isn't that great. But just, I guess, just note that the hats between the two are not exactly the same. Okay. Ki asa Ravin Amar. Ravin comes in from Eretz Yisrael. He has Torah Eretz Yisrael. So he says, look, here's how I received it. The Kohen Gadol's belt that he wears on Yom Kippur, everyone agrees it's made of linen. I mean, everyone agrees. It's a pasuk in Chumash. And during the rest of the year, Kohen Gadol's belt is made out of klayim. Again, that's a pasuk in Chumash. So there's no room for machlokas. The whole debate is regarding the belt worn by Kohen Hedjot, where the Torah does not describe its composition. Rabbi says it's made out of kalayim. Okay, good. What we suggested earlier, Ravin says, I know this to be so. I have a tradition that Rabbi says that the composition of the belt of the Kohen Hedjot year round is made up of shatnez. And Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon Amar Shalbutz. Good. We learned the same thing as well. The Abisara, what are we quoting right now? We're quoting from the Torah, from the Parsha of Trumas Hadeshin. Every morning there's a mitzvah where the Kohen goes up to the top of the Mizbeach, takes a shovel full of ashes off, just one, walks down the Mizbeach, and leaves it on the east side of the ramp. This is a mitzvah known as Trumas Hadeshin. Now you do that day in and day out. Eventually there's going to be a huge accumulation of ash on the east side of the Mizbeach. The Mishnah tells us elsewhere that one of the miracles that takes place in the Beis HaMikdash is that what happens to that ash? It gets absorbed right into the ground. Okay, but you only take off one shovelful. What do you do with the rest of the ash pile on the top of the Mizbeach? You take out the garbage. That's what's called harumas. I'm sorry, not trumas hadeshen. I apologize. But that's called hotsaas hadeshen. That's when you take out the garbage. In the meantime, however, the Torah tells us that when the Kohen's going to do trumas hadeshen, he needs to be dressed in big day kahuna. Okay? Normally, we don't dress ourselves up to take out the garbage. Kohen, for a trumas hadeshen, dresses up. Rabbi Yehuda says that when you do Trumas Hadeshen, you wear your big day kahuna. Now, even though the Torah only tells us you're wearing the pants and the robe, but you also put on the belt and the hat as well. All four begadim. Rav Dosa Amar Lahavi Big Day Kohen Gadol Yom Kippurim Shein Ksharin LeKohen Hedjo. Now, Rabbi Dosa says, you know what you could wear? Meaning you, the Kohen Hedjo. You can wear the begadim of the Kohen Gadol. Use the begadim of the Kohen Gadol. Okay? Meaning the Kohen Gadol is not going to use it again. For him, it was a one-time usage. So, you can borrow the begadim of the Kohen Gadol. It has to fit. Yes, yes. Right? Stay tuned. So, but you can wear it. Now, how can you wear it? Meaning, is it acceptable uniform? It has to be that, according to Rabbi Dosa, the belt worn by the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur is the same belt as worn by a Kohen Haji year-round. Otherwise, it's simply not going to work. So Rabbi Amar Shu Chivas Bedavis. So Rabbi says, I object. I object for two reasons. Number one, Chad Abav Nechir Kohen Gadol Yom Kippur Lozuav Nechir Shul Kohen Haji. My first objection is not the same. Meaning, what belt is worn by a Kohen Haji year-round? Shatnez. What belt is worn by the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur? Boots. Linen. So Rebbe says, that's my first objection point. Again, consistent with what we now know, is that according to Rebbe, the belt of a Kohen Hedjot year-round is made up of Shatnez. V'od, and furthermore, begadim shi nesham shemem kedusha chamura to sham shemem kedusha kala. And then Rebbe, Ben, you already prognosticated Rebbe's next point, which is, what are you doing? Clothing worn for the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, you're now going to use it for a Kohen Hedjot to wear to take out the Shurmas Hadeshen? You're downgrading Kedusha? You can't do that. Elamat HaMalama, Yobash, L'Rabba says HaShechakim. So he says, you know what the Torah is telling us with the Yobash? That even if it's used, gently used, Big Day Kahuna, that would be okay, that would be acceptable. Generally speaking, Kohen Gadol's got to dress up nice every day. New clothing, fine clothing. Right, doing the avoda bekavod, but for the trumas hadeshen, if the clothing is slightly used, gently used, that's okay. Now, if you take a look at Rashi over here, Rashi actually gives two pshatim in what the Gemara means at this point in time. Rashi says, number one, what I just said, that it's okay to use gently used clothing; you don't have to. Rashi offers another pshat, which is that you have to use gently used clothing for the avodah of Trumas Hadeshen, but truth of the matter is Rashi does not like that pshat. Anyway, v'azda Rav Dosa l'tami d'tanya v'nicham sham alam shetunim geniza. Rabbi Dosa amr shalo yishtamish mem yom kippurim acher. And as far as Rabbi Dosa is consistent, meaning Rabbi Dosa was the one arguing that it can't, the big adam, the Kohen Gadol, can be reused, not by another Kohen Gadol. No, every year Kohen Gadol is wearing new big day Kohen Gadol, but in other words, can be reused by another Kohen Hedjot. Okay? Sholei Shamash Bem Yom Kippur Macher. Fine. Period. Okay? We finished up the topic of mezuzah today. We had a long discussion on the Amud Aleph regarding a possible distinction between a big city shul versus a small town shul, whether or not it is required a mezuzah. The Gemara abandoned ship on that distinction. Gemara says no. There's no such distinction. Either a shul is or is not chayv and mezuzah. Okay, the Rambam says a shul is not chayv and mezuzah, but that's we've yet to find a shul that doesn't have a mezuzah. The minhag has been for years now to put a mezuzah on a shul. And then we moved into the Mishnah. And we moved ahead in the discussion of the substitute Kohen. What's his chinuch? What's going to be his inauguration? How is he going to be inaugurated? So that was a discussion amongst the Amorai. If he gets called up before the Tamei Shel Shachar, that's easy. If he gets called up after the Tamei Shel Shachar, that's more complicated. And the Gemara offers a couple of suggestions in terms of how exactly he's going to be inaugurated. And finally, the rest of today's discussion was the belt of a Kohen Hedyot year-round. The Torah does not say what its composition is. Is it shatnez? Is it linen? Machlok is tanayim. And we have established the Gemara's conclusion is that Rebbe's of the opinion that the composition, the belt of a hedyot, Kohen Hedyot, is made up of shatnez.